Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. January 31st, 2014, Super Bowl coming up this weekend. Lots of crazy stuff going on, as I often like to think. I think Rod Serling has been writing the script. I thank you for joining me. We're a little bit out of the deep freeze finally in the Northeast. We're above freezing. Crazy time of the year, crazy time for this country. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And in the wake of the terrorist attacks of 9/11, I decided that I needed to take my show on the road, so to speak, provide my perspectives on the true significance of America's immigration laws, America's borders, the way that we admit foreign nationals into our country, not as a matter of xenophobia, but my concern is that we don't permit people to enter the United States who would ultimately do harm to us. And it's the kind of job that we as people who live in houses or apartments all are very familiar with. That is why our front door, folks, comes equipped with a peephole and a doorbell or a door knocker or some signaling device, so we make a conscious decision that we don't let somebody into our homes who would do harm to us. Very simple, very fundamental. The immigration laws are blind about race, religion, ethnicity. It's purely about keeping out aliens, and there's that word, any person not a citizen or national of the United States is, in fact, under the law, an alien. Somebody who would not have a dangerous communicable disease, somebody who would not be a convicted felon or a fugitive from justice, someone who's not a war criminal, a spy, a terrorist, likely to become a public charge, or somebody who is likely to take a job an American desperately needs to support himself and or his family. That's not my definition of why we have the immigration laws, folks. It's to be found in the Immigration and Nationality Act, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and I'm not going to talk about any more law tonight. That's your law lesson for the evening. But I want to make it clear why we have these laws, and so I'm really in a quandary as to what the Republicans did when they went on retreat and retreated. And in fact, this evening I'm very excited that I have a very special guest joining me, a gentleman by the name of Eric Gehr. He is running for Congress, and boy, do we have an interesting show lined up. He will be joining me in just a couple of minutes. But before he does, I want to remind people about the two websites that I think are super important. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. And for many years now, I've been a proud senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. And I know that if you're not in California, you're probably thinking, oh gosh, why do I care about California? Well, you should, because all of the problems California is now facing because of the failures not only of America to secure the borders and enforce the laws, but because California has declared itself to be a sanctuary state. It's in a state of bankruptcy. It's in a state of economic freefall. Many issues affecting this the state that certainly is an important part of America. And, you know, you look at what's happened because of these failures and you realize how important this all is. And they are very much in the forefront of providing the insights that you're not going to get in the mainstream media. I've been affiliated with them for quite some time. I'm only one of many people who write articles for them. My most recent article, which I believe was posted today, is Tunnel Vision, and it deals with how every time they seem to interview a politician on the TV, especially after the President's State of the Union address, they say, well, when they secure the border, then we'll do something else. It's not about the border. The border is important, but it's only one of many components. It's got a lot of components, this immigration system. So it's kind of bizarre that the focus has been on that border. And so this is what I have been doing, working with them to get a message out there. And there are other experts who also deal with the population-related issues, quality of life issues, and in fact, they just had an interesting ad campaign in conjunction with Martin Luther King's birthday and about how we are really depriving Americans, and in particular America's minorities, of their thin slice of the American dream. And it's only going to get worse if anything that even resembles comprehensive immigration reform is enacted. And I want to make a quick point, by the way. And by the way, their website, if I didn't put it out there, is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And by the way, if you become aware of any speaking opportunities, you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. You can contact CAPS. They will let me know. Because, you know, the media is really doing everything it can to press or suppress any coverage. There were times when I could have done a dozen or more television interviews in a month on the immigration issue. The Republicans went off to a retreat and sounded the retreat simultaneously, and incredibly, not a single TV station called up and said, let's talk about it. Most of the media is in cahoots with the people that want to jam as many people into America as possible. They don't care about the damage it would do, only the profits they can earn. And it is so outrageous, I don't even know where to begin. You know, this notion that we are going to somehow make things wonderful for corporations at the expense of American workers and American families and national security is outrageous beyond belief. And in fact, it was very interesting because I just put out an email with my commentary, and I quoted Senator Sessions, who talked about how America is not an oligarchy, that in a republic, the government answers to the people. Not long ago, I was on a program, and I was asked by the person whose program I was on, who would you like to see run for president? And I've reached my decision, ladies and gentlemen, long before anybody is even thinking of announcing. Of course, what difference does it make? I would love to see Senator Jeff Sessions in the Oval Office. That would give me my first night's sleep in a decade or more. He truly gets it. He's truly a man of the people, truly has the stature and the compassion, truly has the integrity. So, Senator Sessions, I haven't told you this before, but if you're listening and I've embarrassed you, well, that's okay. I just want you to know that I'm a big fan of yours, and I would love to see you run for president. I doubt it's going to happen, unfortunately, but boy, that would make me happy. In any event, what I want all of you to understand is just how screwy all of these proposals for any sort of comprehensive immigration reform or even a program that doesn't provide citizenship. You know, you've got political cowards out there, if you will, who try to take a halfway mamby-pamby, well, we're not going to give them citizenship, but we'll give them permission to work. And no, it's not the same thing, and it's this and it's that. And they have all these excuses. So why don't we cut to the chase and accept something here? Most illegal aliens don't want citizenship. They want permission to work, and we would have to give them an identity document. And those two things would undermine national security and undermine the American economy. Bear that in mind. I see that Eric Gurr is on the line. Let me bring him on. Eric Gurr, happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining me.
Glad to be here.
I'm sure you've had an exciting week out there on the campaign trail. Why don't you tell my audience a little bit about yourself and why you are running for Congress? How's that for a good starting point?
That sounds great. Yeah, I ran a business here in Hamilton, Ohio for about 20 years. I was born and raised here. Never really involved in politics much, but, you know, over the last, I guess since 2008, really, to be honest, when things started going south, I just got more and more into it. And then finally, this summer, I made the decision that after 24 years, it was time for John Boehner to go. And immigration reform, as they call it, was a big part of that. Syria, the economy. It's just I'd had enough.
Well, I think you're not alone in this. What kind of business do you have?
It's a computer consulting firm. We do placement services for desktop support, and then we have another side of business where I mostly work that does what's called SQL data analysis and tuning.
So you looked at the situation, and you heard Washington calling, huh?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Funny you said Washington. Actually, in my lineage, nine generations back, George Washington is my second cousin. His grandmother was my grandmother nine generations back. So
wow. You know, it's funny. Yeah. I worked with an agent who went on to become a Secret Service agent and became the agent in charge of the Maryland office. and even protected the president. His name was James Washington. And guess what? He was also a descendant of George, so I guess you guys are cousins or something.
Yeah, that would be by marriage. I was on the maternal side. The Ball family, which was Washington's mother and grandmother, is where I'm related. And then Augustus Washington was on the paternal side, so yeah.
So the Ball family, B-A-L-L, that's interesting, because Greg Ball, a friend of mine who chairs the New York State Senate Homeland Security Committee, he's a New York State Senator. Next time I see him, I'm going to have to ask Greg about whether or not he traces his lineage back to George Washington also.
Yeah, if he's from Virginia, he probably does. It was a big family.
No, he was from New York, but, you know, you never know. Somebody might have gotten on a horse and headed north.
That's right.
And, you know, at the end of the day, we are all Americans, and that's the issue that I think we should really focus on. We've been divided up so much, you know, Democrat versus Republican, Tea Party versus whatever. At the end of the day, I'm sure you're going to agree with me, Eric, I think most people want pretty much the same things for themselves and their families. We may have our disagreements on certain issues, but fundamentally, I think we all want to be successful at whatever our endeavors are, live a decent life, and feel secure that our country looks out for our safety and well-being. Doesn't that seem reasonable to you?
Well, absolutely. That's the task of any government, especially when elected by the people. You know, I'm sick of this stuff, trying to make people feel bad for saying America first. Well, of course America first. We're here. We're citizens. We pay in the load for this. And the government ought to be structured to, if not help us, at least not get in our way.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way, as I always like to write at the end of my commentaries. And, you know, I just wrote an article not long ago, and I've used it as a motto. People say it should be a bumper sticker. It's not anti-immigrant to be pro-American.
Absolutely, yeah. Most of us are from immigrants one way or the other. But,
yeah.
You know, flooding the borders and – sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and so – does it make any sense to you that these Republicans went off on this retreat and retreated? I mean, you know, it's the most astonishing turn of events I could ever imagine. I was on with Neil Cavuto not long ago, and Neil said to me, he says, well, you know, the Republicans are running scared. They want to attract the Latino vote. And first of all, it just seems to me they're talking about the Latino vote as though once you know some guy's last name or some gal's last name is Rodriguez or Garcia, you know all you need to know about them. It seems like an insidious and disgusting form of profiling. And do you really think that it was the promise of green cards or lawful status for aliens that got people to vote for Obama? I think they voted for Obama, frankly, because they want big government and all the programs that he stands for and that the Republicans, at least in theory, don't stand for. Do you think I'm getting that wrong?
No, I think you've hit it dead on. They're coming over here. Their hope is that they'll vote Democrat because they'll take money away from the construction workers and the plumbers and the doctors and everyone and give it to them. This same kind of political tactic was tried in the 1980s by the Labour Party in England, and that was the stated purpose of it. They never wanted another prime minister like Margaret Thatcher. They knew they could have a dependent voting class. But, you know, that's the obvious stuff. I think one of the things you hit on so well, Mike, is the terrorism aspect of it and the fraud with the existing immigration.
Well, that's what I couldn't understand. You know, I watched Bob Goodlatte's hearing. I sat in my house and I watched the hearing. That's the beauty of streaming video. And the hearing was fundamentally predicated on this discovery, and it was, I think, an ABC News report, that they had found members of the Mexican drug cartels were able to get political asylum in the United States to achieve two goals. Number one, flee from the violence of their competition by the competing cartels in Mexico, and number two, attack their own people inside the United States once they were here because there were other members of the cartel who had similarly fled to the United States. And then, you know, the way that they structured the hearing, it was specifically about the pressure this was putting on the border. I wish that Bob Goodlatte had simply talked about the pressure it puts on the whole country. Immigration isn't just about California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. Certainly they're getting hammered. But I got to tell you, and I'm sure you're seeing it in Ohio, New York is a border state. Every state is a border state. If you have an international airport, if you have a coastline or a seaport, or if you're on the northern or southern borders, you're a border state. New York has the triple threat. We've got the northern border. We've got a huge seaport. And New Jersey right next to us has an even bigger seaport. And then we've got the international airports, JFK and Newark International, and there's airports up north in New York State. So this notion that we're just going to look at those four border states and ignore the other 46 states, to me, is disingenuous and dangerous. And by the way, think of the Boston Marathon bombing. The Tsarnaev brothers came here with their family from Russia, applied for political asylum, claiming credible fear, and as soon as they got their lawful status, they went back to Russia. It would seem to me that someone needs to make ICE and DHS, the agency I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, accountable, and ask them, why in the world didn't anyone take a second look at the Tsarnaev family long before April 15th of last year, when they killed people and irrevocably wounded people in that terror attack? Wouldn't you think this would make sense? I mean, why do we have a military if we're unable to secure our own borders and make certain that people who want to do us in aren't permitted into the country, and if they make their way here, that we hunt them down and dump them out of our country?
Well, that's absolutely right. They committed fraud by coming in here. But, you know, you said it might not be an issue here, but here in the 8th District of Ohio, which is in the heartland.
Yep.
I was talking to my campaign manager, Frank Malillo. His dad owns a grocery store down in an old part of Hamilton, and there's illegals all over there, you know. And he was telling me how he was talking to a couple of them just today, and some of them will have 20 or 30 different driver's licenses that
yep.
they've bought. So that,
yep.
they'll commit little crimes, maybe nothing serious, but speeding tickets. Well, that ticket's never going to get paid. Those folks don't pay taxes. They just depress the wages here in the 8th District, and they cost us a lot.
And think about identity theft. Think of how many people – I remember reading a terrible story. Some poor guy was totally disabled. I think he lost a limb or whatever in an industrial accident. And the IRS and the Labor Department came after him and said – what do you mean you're on disability? You just earned, you know, whatever it was, $12,000. It wasn't a lot of money, but they accused him of fraud. And then when they investigated the case, they found out that some illegal alien had stolen this guy's identity. And for a while, they had cut off his disability payments. I mean, think how crazy this is. And this is all going on because we have a government that won't enforce the most fundamental laws that a country can have, securing its borders and making certain that its citizens get first shot at everything.
That's right. There's a great historian named Paul Johnson from England, and he wrote the book Modern Times. It's a fantastic survey of the 20th century. And he said in that book, a government has to do three things. Protect the money supply, enforce the rule of law, and protect the borders. It has to do those three things. To do less than that is a radicalization of government. And that's just what's happened here. You know, it just goes from bad to worse. And too many of the Republicans, and Mike, we got to be fair to the Republicans. It's not all Republicans. Most of them know this. It's that small group led by John Boehner, Paul Ryan, and a couple other ones who aren't being honest about the debate.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm a registered lifelong Democrat. I've never voted a party line. I tell people, if you vote a party line, you need to hang mattresses on the walls of your house. You're crazy. In fact, I made that very point when I addressed the Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach 2 weeks ago, today, in fact. Well, 2 weeks is coming Sunday. I went down there 2 weeks ago today. And there are many Republicans who are my heroes. I'll start out with my biggest hero in the Republican Party, and that's Jeff Sessions. And then we can talk about my good friend Lou Barletta. He was the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, got sued by the ACLU for enacting ordinances to combat illegal immigration, not out of xenophobia, but out of the fact that a Dominican drug gang had set up shop in this very beautiful bucolic town in the mountains of Pennsylvania, former mining town, and they were killing the people in his community. And
yeah.
In fact, I did an article, I did a C-SPAN interview with him, and you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, and see it. I think I sent you a copy of the link. And he
yeah.
said, you know, I went to the Justice Department, and they handed him a mug. I mean, could you picture this? The mayor of a small town goes to the Justice Department, and this was under George W. Bush, and he said, we've got a problem. These Dominican drug gangsters are shooting people. Some guy walked up to one of these thugs and said, listen, take the drugs and get out of the playground. My children play there. I grew up in that playground. You don't belong here with that stuff. And in front of witnesses that night, this guy pulled a gun out and shot this guy in the face and killed him dead on the spot.
Oh,
and the Justice Department handed Lou a mug and said, here's a mug, lots of luck, we're not going to help you. I kid you not. He's now a member of Congress. He's on the Homeland Security Committee. He's a good friend of mine. Steve King is trying to do the right thing. Trey Gowdy, I believe, is trying very hard to do the right thing. But how do they counter the stuff coming from their alleged leadership? You know, there's a great Yiddish expression that says that when a fish goes bad, it smells from the head. And we've got a rotting head in a couple of spots in our government, it would seem.
Yeah, it is it's a coalition of the Democrats who we know are buying votes. We, you know, everybody knows what the deal is. But this handful of Republicans that have joined with them, you notice they never tell you how this is good for America. You never hear that.
No, they just say it, and the journalists, so-called, never hold them accountable. They just
absolutely.
Kind of nod and go, uh-huh, we need comprehensive reform. It'll be great for the economy. And they go, uh-huh. And no one ever says,
they never
explain
ask
it.
How.
Explain
right,
it.
Right.
The devil's in the details. Yep. And, you know, I've been looking at this thing real hard. I've been involved with this issue. I hate admitting it. I think you were about 3 years old when I got my badge back in 1971. but, you know, I've been involved in this issue for a long time. Last year, over $200 billion, with a B, was wired out of the United States by foreign workers, both legal and illegal. And it's not just about Mexico, and it's not just about Latin America. Globally, India gets more remittances from the first world than any other country. And now you have comprehensive reform that would have given three times as many H-1B visas out. And then on top of it, for the first time, it would have permitted the wives and children, adult children of H-1B visa holders, to work in the United States and have as much right to a job as you or I. And incredibly, Ted Cruz wanted to make it five times the number, not three times the number. What in the world are any of these folks thinking about when you realize what the unemployment rate looks like and you look at the way that this contributes to the deficit? $200 billion, when you look at the multiplier effect, is more than a $500 billion sucked right out of our economy.
Sure. Yeah, if it can't circulate here, it can't multiply. Absolutely. I think Ted Cruz and some of the other ones on the H-1B will be able to convince them that that's a bad idea. You know, like I said, I own an IT company. I've been involved with that kind of thing. What happens on those H-1Bs is a company like Microsoft or IBM might bring in an H-1B over from, let's say, India. Then they get their green card, and then all of a sudden those folks are competing on the same level. So instead of, you know, it was, let's say it's a $60,000 job, they came in at $40,000. 5 years later, the H-1B is a green card. Now he can get $60,000, and he ends up out of work. It is a never-ending cycle. And it is economic stupidity. It is indefensible. It cannot work. And they keep doing the same thing because Mark Zuckerberg can make a few extra bucks. I guess a billion's not enough.
No, I mean, isn't that remarkable? I compare the Zuckerbergs and I compare the Bill Gateses and all these other characters to a malignant tumor. You know, tumors have an insatiable appetite for nutrients. They even secrete hormones so that they can grow networks of blood vessels so they can bathe in nutrients. And you have these knuckleheads bathing in the wealth without any consideration that just like that tumor that when it kills the patient dies with the patient, if they, God forbid, kill America, where do they plan to go? What planet? America holds the whole free world together.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
We weaken America, the whole world is in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I was just agreeing with you. It's one thing Newt Gingrich used to always say, we need to stop exporting the cake and start exporting the recipe. And that has kind of turned full circle. Instead of exporting work with lower wages to the Chinese, now they want to bring the lower wages in here. Well, logically, that can't end well. Logically, you lower the wage to the point where the guy who's working cannot buy your product.
That's right. We're killing the middle class. And I made that point when I spoke before a Rotary group in Alabama, and a couple of months later they passed one of the most stringent immigration laws on the state level. I think it was slightly more stringent than the Arizona law. I won't take credit for it, but I think I influenced their thinking. You know, look, we already admit almost 1.1 million lawful immigrants into the United States every year. That's roughly 100,000. Now, not all of them are working, and some of them are children, but they're potential workers. And then we admit about 500,000 students into the United States every year, and they ultimately almost invariably get what's known as practical training, which means work authorization. And then we're bringing in 65,000 H-1Bs, H-2A agriculture workers, and a host of other temporary worker programs, the foreign exchange visitor program that the State Department loves so much. So we are actually admitting into the United States on the average month more workers than the number of new jobs that are being created without providing employment authorization to what might well turn out to be 25 million workers. How in the world can that end well?
It cannot. It is mathematically impossible. To mention the drain on Mexico and these other countries. Mexico's turning into a narco state because all the decent people are trying to get out or have gotten out. And that's the one thing I never understood about Democrats either, is that they think so little of Hispanics that they can't govern themselves. Like, that is the racist piece of this.
But
Mexico's not.
And you know how many of my neighbors will say to me, well, you know, we put these people to work. We're helping them. I mean, an American wouldn't work for that money, but $6 an hour for a Mexican is great money. And I look at them and I say, could you be any more disgusting?
Yeah.
What do you mean for a Mexican that's good money? Are they subhuman? They are no different from you or I. And I hear this stuff blithely rolling out of their mouths like snow in a blizzard, and I say, wait a minute. Do you even hear what you're saying? See, what we're doing is propping up the oligarchy of Mexico, and I think we're seeking to emulate Mexico in the United States. The young, able-bodied men who come to the United States from Mexico so they could be terribly exploited are the same people who should be storming the gates at the presidential palace demanding a piece of the action financially, economically. Mexico has the 16th or 17th largest economy in the world. Their people are absolutely conscientious and hardworking. They should be able to be as successful as they want to be in their own country. For them to come here really empowers the oligarchy so that they can maintain their control over the population of Mexico. And we are aiding and abetting, and then we wonder why people develop animosity towards the United States. Look at NAFTA and the damage it did to Mexican ranches and Mexican farmers.
Yeah, you see, you called it the oligarchy in Mexico, which it is, and then what's becoming in the United States is plutocracy, you know, where everything is driven by a very few number of people who make billions of dollars and want to make billions or more and corrupt the free market system by doing it. And then claim the mantle of free market capitalism. Well, that's not free market capitalism. That is plutocracy, plain and simple.
Do you know, did you see that study? And I was just on a show when I was down in South Carolina. They took the world's wealth, the estimated world's wealth, and divided it right down in half and put it on a mythical scale. And they said, okay, we have half of the wealth on this side of the scale and half of the wealth on the other side of the scale, and they took the wealthiest people in the world. Guess how many people on one side of the scale balance the wealth of the rest of the world?
I think I saw that. It was less than a couple hundred, wasn't it?
It was 85 people.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Does that not take your breath away?
Yes.
You know, I have to tell you.
I'm a free market guy. I love that they made the money. But the tax system and the free market in the United States is what's stopping them. Obama says he wants to spread it around. You have to do that through low taxation, low regulation. Incent those folks to spend that money and to create more wealth. We don't do that anymore.
You know, it's remarkable. I don't know if you remember when we were chatting. But here the new war cry that we're hearing from the Democratic Party is wage equality or income equality, right?
Right.
Here is what Alan Greenspan had to say about this. This is what he testified for Chuck Schumer before the Immigration Subcommittee in the U.S. Senate. This was on April 30th, 2009. You know, I got to tell you, Eric, I saw the hearing. I was on a radio show a couple of days later. Or the next day, and the young lady whose show I was on said to me, what did you think of Greenspan? And I said, well, it was the first time I'd seen someone testify while suffering from rigor mortis. I mean, I can't stand this guy. She said she wound up laughing so hard she had mascara running down her cheeks for the balance of her show. But this is why I despise the guy. he was testifying about the need to greatly ramp up the H-1B visa program. And, you know, America's immigration laws exist for two primary purposes: protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. In fact, the Labor Department used to run immigration prior to the Second World War when they realized that immigration was a part of national security. So in justifying ramping up tons more of foreign high-skilled workers, he said, first, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units. What a poetic way to describe American homes lost to foreclosure.
Right.
Vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes, and of course house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and in the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Actually, what destroyed the banking system was his subprime mortgage program that he bragged about 4 years earlier when he stood before the Fed. But now he's saying, if we can get foreign families into those homes, we can jack up the price of houses, which, of course, would be wonderful for the banks, and that's all he cares about. And then, and this is the one that gets me and talks about income equality, he said the second bonus would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite. Isn't that a great way to describe Americans with an education? The privileged
elite.
Yeah,
hardworking Americans. Yeah.
The privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. And here comes that sentence. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. So what he's really saying is, forget that the immigration laws today say that you can't bring in a foreign worker if that worker is likely to displace an American or drive down wages or worsen working conditions. That's in the law now. That's the part of the law, ladies and gentlemen, that they want to throw out, that the people that want to reform the immigration laws want to eliminate the protection afforded to American workers and their families. This is a betrayal of America and Americans on a galactic scale. And so he says we're going to greatly reduce income inequality. This isn't about giving Americans opportunity to raise themselves up, but making certain that even if you try to live the American dream and get that education and acquire those extra skills, it's only going to give you a teeny tiny income improvement, because after all, we have to have wage equality. Wage equality to me is communism. To each according to his needs, from each according to his ability, and no one's going to look at the fact that one guy has a PhD and the other guy dropped out of high school.
Yeah, it's kind of what you said before. Can't tell the same joke, but be careful what you wish for. Wage equality is about lowering wages of people who do well, and to them do well is $50,000 or $60,000 a year. They want to lower their wages. They don't want to raise anybody at the bottom's wage. That's why they want to bring in millions of more workers to even further lower that.
This is a race to
it's
the bottom.
It's the story as old as time. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's 2,000 years of recorded history. That's what governments do, try to take money away from productive people and buy power with it.
You know, I'm thrilled that, you know, with your perspectives and your background, that you're willing to challenge Mr. Boehner. I hope you succeed. You know, the deal is, if nothing else, I hope it starts a conversation. I hope it shakes people up to understand that this isn't about being for or against a political party, but about being for or against America and Americans.
God bless. That's exactly right. This is the center of the fight here. There's a race in Kentucky with Mitch McConnell, Matt Bevin. If we can get a couple of these guys who have lost the faith, so to speak, of conservative and American first idealism, we can make a big difference in a short amount of time.
Oh,
but it's
a
closing window.
I agree. And, you know, when I listened to the debate down in South Carolina, everyone said they wanted to reduce the deficit. The easiest and quickest way to reduce the deficit without even shrinking government, without doing anything, is to enforce the immigration laws, slash the remittances being wired out of the United States of America, get more Americans into those middle-class jobs, get more American children living in poverty out of poverty and into school so they can take those jobs. That's how America was built. We got American kids to go to school. We used to have all these programs to try to inspire American children. I remember as a kid, and you're probably too young to remember it. I'm going to be 66. But when I was a kid, I used to watch the GE College Bowl. I actually went to it a couple of times. And you had competing schools. It was kind of like Jeopardy, but for college kids, and they gave out scholarships. And the big emphasis was on education, the Westinghouse Science Fair. I mean, they still do it, but it's really been downplayed. Because back then, if they wanted to get highly skilled people into those industries, they were looking for Americans to do it. Today,
absolutely,
we're looking around the world, everywhere but here. Everywhere but here. And I think your voice, and with your background, especially in the computer industry, you know, Dan Rather did a report. It was called No Thanks for Everything. And he interviewed three or four computer programmers who were laid off. One woman who had an MBA in computer science, Phi Beta Kappa graduate, had previously been a vice president at a Wall Street bank, got fired without cause because she was to be replaced by someone from India. And she actually, because of her age, I guess she was in her 50s, lost her home, her 401k, her life savings, and the only reason she's not homeless is she moved in with her boyfriend. And one guy at the very end, I'm sorry?
Not, you're right. It's a story you hear too many times. Especially in the IT business, people getting replaced.
And how unfair is that? And you had one guy who said, I helped Obama get elected, and he betrayed us. This is another IT guy.
Yeah.
So for Dan Rather to cover it that way, I think showed some real journalistic integrity on his part, because I've always associated Dan with being a liberal, so-called. And again, folks, that's the point. This is no longer about liberal versus conservative. This is about being pro-American. And you can't
That's
be pro-American
exactly right.
if you're watching more and more American kids falling below the poverty line. You know, people on the other side say to me, oh, you lack compassion. Don't you feel bad? I said, I feel bad for Americans before I feel bad about anybody else. I worry more about feeding my children before I worry about giving to charity. No one who's sane or reasonable would give money to charity if their own children didn't get a meal before bedtime.
Right.
You know, so I think your emphasis on immigration and on what we really need to do is very, very effective. I have to tell you that.
Well, and I do it from an economic standpoint. It is everything's economics. If you don't understand that, you're never going to eat without a job or
right.
somebody else's charity towards you. You have to be able to work, but it doesn't have to be a drudgery. And you should be able to move up in America and live the American dream. And if you keep giving that away and giving it away, it will go away. And that's what we're heading towards.
How does your family feel about your running?
When you
first came up with the idea and you went to your wife and said, guess what I'm going to do? How did she react?
Well, out of the gate, she doesn't think much of politicians, to be honest with you. And I said, well, I don't have to be a politician to do that. That's not the way the country was set up. So it took a little bit of wrangling to talk her into it.
Uh-huh.
But she's behind me now, yeah.
That's good. Well, I know I went through a similar deal when I told my wife I was going to go out there and try to wake people up to how immigration really was the prime vulnerability that resulted in the attacks of 9/11. There's always a certain amount of inertia from folks around you, I find. It's about overcoming inertia.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but I've got there. The kids are behind me. The grandkids just think it's neat, so that they're easy. But, you know, talking to you the other day, one of the things I told my wife as soon as I got off the phone is, it is amazing to me that a man with 30 years experience in this, and then since you've retired, you've still been involved in studying it, served on the 9/11 commission.
Well, I didn't serve on the commission.
The
I provided testimony to the commission.
Okay, that's right, yep.
Yep.
But you're the guys that know firsthand this is what's going on.
Yep.
You know, and I think you're doing a great thing. You're getting the word out there and educating people on what is real.
Well, you know, I feel like a modern-day Paul Revere. You know, Paul Revere, by the way, had it very easy. You know, one if by land, two if by sea. If I needed a lantern for the different ways that the aliens come to the United States, I'd probably have to take the whole supply over at the Home Depot and set fire to the Old North Church in the process. But but the idea is to wake people up to what the nature of the risk is and to be a mythbuster without using explosives, you know, to get to explode old ideas. This isn't about xenophobia. It's about common sense. You're not antisocial if you lock your door at night, especially if the police warn you that there's some thugs wandering around your neighborhood after dark.
Right. Yeah, that's the one point we got to keep stressing. This is like this is no type of xenophobia. This is no type of racism. This is simple economic logic and fact.
And national security.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I never could understand that. You keep a whole border open. That's another thing my campaign manager was saying today is all these folks that walk across the border from Mexico, they know they're not the only ones coming across that border. If somebody wants to hurt you, all they know, all they got to do is get into Mexico and they can come right up.
And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but there was a very alarming report that there are growing numbers of Iranian shock troops being sent to Caracas, Venezuela. They're flying in weekly from Tehran. So if you have somebody living... Yes. And in fact, if you remember, just before the presidential election, there was an attempt to assassinate the Saudi ambassador, blow up the Saudi embassy and possibly the Israeli embassy. And this was being done by some Iranians who had come into the United States. And in fact, there's another individual who entered the United States with a student visa from Iran in 1979, the year that our embassy was overrun in Tehran. He went to school and became an engineer. And subsequently started his own company, went to work for NASA. He was just sentenced to 8 years in jail for providing technology illegally to Iran that enabled them to launch their first satellite. So we're educating people that want to hurt us. On the one hand, we talk about nuclear nonproliferation treaties, but on the other hand, we teach nuclear physics to people from countries that want to do us in. It's so schizophrenic and so absurd. You want to laugh, except this isn't a laughing matter, because this is liable to get a lot of us killed. My fear is this, and in fact, there was a report recently where both the chairman of the Senate and the chairperson of the House Intelligence Committees said that the risk of a terrorist attack is greatest now at any point since prior to 9/11. So when you look at that, you say to yourself, what are we doing now in response to that threat? And the answer is, we're about to give basically a mask, if you will, which is really what an identity document is to somebody who cannot or maybe doesn't want to provide evidence as to who they truly are. It's astonishing to me. And I don't think this is naive. I think this goes with the fact that over $1.5 billion, I've seen one estimate that said over $2 billion, have been pumped into lobbying for comprehensive reform ever since 2007 when the first push took place. So we're really getting the best government money can buy right now, and my big fear is that we will wake up to a nightmare. You know, they're worrying now about the Olympics in Sochi, that the possibility exists that terrorists might blow them up. We are not off the table as a tempting target for Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations either, and the question to ask is, well, what are we doing to protect ourselves? And, you know, I've often said that if you're not willing to secure the borders and enforce immigration laws, then you don't need a military. Because their job is to keep our enemy as far from our shores as possible. My fear is that they're here, and we let them in. And it's not just the Mexican border. Almost half the illegal aliens came through international airports and land border ports. So if you look at it from that angle, and that they've expanded the visa wave of countries from 26 on 9/11 to 37 now, because of pressure by the Chamber of Commerce, I call them the Chamber of Horrors, then you have to ask yourself, how do you defend America? And so to have your voice out there as a candidate making the point, I think is very, very important, no matter how the election turns out, and I wish you well, but the fact that you can bring this to the public attention by your campaign, I can't tell you how important that is, Eric. And again, I hope you succeed, but you understand my point. Raising the issue that nobody wants to talk about is probably the most amazing service that you could do for America.
Well, I'm glad to do it, and I appreciate every bit of support I get, and a chance to come on and talk with you and tell people you got a choice this time. You there's something you can do about this. You can take a positive action and stop it.
Well, I want to tell you how pleased I am that you were able to visit with me for a half hour. If you want to stay with me a little bit more, if there's other points you want to make. By the way, what's your website? Let's get that out there. I mean, you've got to get your website out there.
Sure.
for the folks out there if they want to contact you or whatever.
Yeah, it's www.gurforcongress.com. It's GURFORCongress.com.
How long have you been out on the race? How long
I got in end of September is when I really started hitting it. So coming into my fourth full month here and starting to really roll it out this coming week with a nationwide ad campaign.
Well, that's really, really important. And, you know, given the fact that you're up against somebody with such national prominence, the speaker, I really think that this should catch a lot of national attention, don't you?
Yeah, it, without much effort, it has so far, but we're really putting effort into it. We're starting right now. I got enough money to go national with the campaign, if you will. So, matter of fact,
wow.
It's funny. I right now, I had to step to a friend's house to call you because I'm at a meeting with the Chamber of Commerce, a bunch of people in the Chamber of Commerce locally, who turns out aren't so much in favor of this amnesty and immigration reform as the national chamber is. So that's
no. There's
a big
gap. I've spoken to local chamber people in New York who get it. It's the national that really I've had the arguments with when I've testified before Congress. The national is very different from the local.
Yes, it is. The locals, you're right. They get it. They understand what a danger it is. So.
Well, and now you're out there helping to educate them also. So, you know, we're all on the same team here, Eric, you know, getting people to wake up to what's really being done, not for us, but to us, you know?
That's right, yes.
How's that the way of delineating it?
Yes. Well, like I said, I really do appreciate it. I'm with my campaign manager now. We're getting ready to walk out the door and head back down. We begged off the dinner to meet with you. So,
that's really amazing to me. I really appreciate it, and I hope to be out in your neck of the woods before too very long.
Yeah, I'm hoping the same thing in the next couple weeks. I talked to some people about you just a few days ago, and they said, "Yeah, there's a few Republicans still who don't quite get it in the area, and you know, we need to get them together."
Well, school's going to be in session pretty soon. What do you think?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Eric, travel safely. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program. It's a great way to start the weekend for me, and I hope you have a very successful and safe weekend out there on the campaign trail.
Well, I sure appreciate it, Mike. God bless.
Be well.
Thanks,
speak to you soon. Yep.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Well, folks, that's Eric Gurr. You know, this is what this is all about. I am going to use this program, and by the way, there may be news coming soon. I'm trying to make arrangements. I may be shifting this program to a different network, greater reach. This is about getting information out there to the American people that they won't cover on CNN or any of the other networks. This is the antidote to the news blackout of the news media that have a vested interest in open borders because they're going to be able to charge more for airtime. That's not helping national security, and it's not helping Americans find work. It's not helping our country at all. And this is the way we fight back. We fight back by getting information out there. Knowledge is power, and that's what this program is about. I will do my best to bring you guests who provide you with the perspective you're not going to hear anywhere else. That is my mission. As an immigration agent, my mission was to go out there and enforce the laws. I have a new mission, and my mission has been ongoing since 9/11 to wake up our fellow Americans and to wake up the politicians who are willing to listen and see what we could do about getting rid of the politicians who won't listen. That's what the democratic process is about, ladies and gentlemen. We live in a wacky era with politicians. Some of them are good. They represent us. But the ones who don't need to be made accountable, and that's the work that only we the people can do. So, in any event, you know, just to quickly go over what I started to say about Senator Jeff Sessions, here's a guy who really almost sounds like an old-time Democrat more than a Republican in terms of his concern about the average working family. I can't tell you how many speeches or press releases that Senator Sessions has come up with telling people about how important it is for America to secure its borders, enforce its immigration laws, and create opportunities for American citizens. Unfortunately, that seems to be a rarity among most politicians these days. And quite frankly, I don't get it. And that's the reason that I write for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They put my articles out there when I write them, and they put other articles out there. This is the way we need to function. Remember, the First Amendment, and I always like to spend a little bit of time visiting with folks to talk about the importance of the First Amendment, is about not only freedom of press and freedom of speech and freedom of religion. We all know that. But let's never forget the other two components to the First Amendment, the right to seek redress of grievances. And folks, if you don't have grievances, check for a flatline EEG or a pulse, and the right for peaceable assemblage. And what does that mean? It means that we can sit down with one another. We can disagree. I mean, that's as American as apple pie. It's part of America's political DNA, disagree, to argue. All that the Founding Fathers said is do it peaceably. Leave your guns, your knives, and your clubs at home. Have that argument. Have that debate. We've become so polarized when a Chuck Schumer can get out there and say, well, they should sick the IRS on the Tea Party. You know, folks, it took my breath away. That's about as un-American a statement as any I have heard in recent years since Joe McCarthy. Why in the world would any politician, any American, think it appropriate that the power of one of the most powerful law enforcement agencies that controls so much of our lives, the Internal Revenue Service, which, by the way, is also being called into action with Obamacare, how in the world does a politician with a straight face talk about using the power of the Internal Revenue Service against the Tea Party? This isn't a hate group. They're not calling for violence. All they're calling for is a reassessment of how we do business. This is thuggery. We've gone from a democracy to a thugocracy when we have members of the Senate, like Schumer, and you have a president who says, I have a pen and I have a phone. Well, I have a constitution. So, you know, we the people have been sitting on our rear ends for far too long, ignoring what these folks are saying. Take them at their word. The one time that President Obama told the truth was when he said, change has come to America. This is not the change we wanted or expected, but we're getting it whether we like it or not. And when you can listen to the Republicans talk about providing a means for illegal aliens to be granted lawful status, that means identity documents. When you look at the Real ID Act, when you look at the 9/11 Commission report, this was the way that the terrorists, not only on 9/11, but other terrorists were able to enter the United States and hide themselves in plain sight, and nobody went looking for them. And now no one is looking for them. And it's lie after lie. We're told that if we enforce the immigration laws, then community policing goes out the window. That's another one of those lies. One of the responsibilities that I had as an immigration agent on the drug task force, I had a desk at the FBI, I had a desk at ATF, I had a desk at DEA. I worked with DEA for 14 years, out on the street with them, New York City Police, State Police, out on Long Island, and in other parts as well. One of my key things that I was able to do because of my authority as an immigration agent was to convince aliens involved with criminal activity or aliens who had knowledge of criminal activity to come forward so that we could give them permission to stay here and work in the United States and possibly, even if they weren't a threat to us, give them a visa so they could come here with their families if they helped us solve major crimes. It was an amazing opportunity for them, and they did it. Nobody said, oh, my God, immigration officer, I'm not going to talk to you. No, they were happy to talk to me because we had the capability, and the capability still exists, to give an alien who cooperates the authority to remain in the United States permanently. So much of what you are hearing in the news are lies. If you speak to law enforcement officers, they will tell you that immigration laws are very powerful and very important. When you listen to a chief of police, you're really talking to a politician. because his or her job depends on the mayor or the governor or whoever the chief executive is they work for. And if they say something that goes against the political winds of their community, they'll be on the unemployment line, and they know it. So they know what they have to say as soon as the cameras turn on. They know what they have to say as soon as the microphone flips on. The bottom line is among the most fundamental laws that any country can enact are immigration laws, laws that deal with securing the border. Without borders, you don't have a country, just the way without walls, you don't have a house. And everybody understands that. And this has been a perversion of international law and common sense, this push for comprehensive reform and amnesty. It started with Jimmy Carter as an immigration agent. I had a front row seat. We were given clear instructions. You will not use the term illegal alien or else. And being so angered by it, I wound up, because of my twisted sense of humor, referring to illegal aliens as being pre-citizens, because I knew what Carter was doing. Carter told us when the census was ongoing that we were not allowed to arrest illegal aliens without getting authorization from headquarters. Not arrest illegal aliens. Did they tell that to DEA? Can't arrest drug dealers? The census is going on. Did they tell that to the IRS? Don't arrest anybody for tax fraud. We've got a census in progress. No, this was about gerrymandering votes, both in the Congress and in the Electoral College, because the idea was that generally it was the cities that tended to vote Democratic that had the greatest collection of illegal aliens. So the trick was to get as many of those illegal aliens counted so they got reapportionments of the seats in the House and reapportionments of the votes in the Electoral College so that the liberal cities would get more votes in both. It was about gerrymandering at the cost to national security. It started with Jimmy Carter. And, of course, it picked up speed. Ronald Reagan gave us the first amnesty, and he never, ever did anything to increase the number of agents to enforce the law where the employer sanctions laws were concerned. And employer sanctions, for those of you not familiar with it, simply means that if you knowingly hire an illegal alien, you're subject to being fined and even criminally prosecuted. That was the first. That was part and parcel of the amnesty of 1986. And everybody knew that they were quadrupling the workload of the agents, but they didn't give us a single additional agent. So what could possibly go wrong? So please understand the problem. It is both political parties that bear responsibility for the nightmare that we find ourselves in. And the only solution, folks, is to support the candidates that understand the true significance of immigration laws and America's borders. And if you have a candidate running for office today, and even if you don't agree with them on some other issues, I don't care. Vote for the candidate who is firmly in the corner of secure borders and the effective enforcement of the immigration laws. Vote for the candidate who opposes any amnesty by any name. Because if we do not secure the borders, if we enact a massive amnesty program, the damage to America's national security will be irrevocable. There will be no going back. There will be no do-overs. Focus on what's most critically important. If this was the Titanic and the ship is going down, your concern is to do two things. Get your life preserver and head for the lifeboat. You're not going to worry that the necktie you're wearing doesn't match your jacket or the socks don't match your shoes or some other silly nonsense. You're going to grab that life preserver and charge towards those lifeboats so you don't go down with the ship. If we wind up giving, and it could be 20 or 30 million illegal aliens, employment authorization, and equal standing in the labor pool with Americans, the middle class will be done. They will have an exhibit in the Museum of Natural History in New York and elsewhere, and there will be a little cage with a depiction of a middle-class family. There is no way that we can sustain that big an influx of authorized workers in a labor pool that's unemployed now. There is no way that we could overcome the damage to national security and public safety by giving millions of illegal aliens who snuck into the United States to evade the inspections process that's supposed to keep out criminals and terrorists to give them identity documents without so much as a face-to-face interview, without being able to verify not only their name but their country of citizenship. I can't overemphasize this enough. There is no way to overemphasize it. This is the stark reality. You look at the 9/11 Commission report, and you understand very quickly how deadly dangerous this is. And that's something that we really and truly need to understand. I know I've read it before, but, you know, I can't say it enough times, that immigration fraud was the way that these people came into the United States, these terrorists, and that's how they were able to embed themselves, and ultimately that's how they were able to attack us. Shame me, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, sorry, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Let me not get that sideways. We've been fooled a number of times. We were attacked twice in 1993 by terrorists who defrauded the immigration system. We were attacked again on 9/11, same deal. Boston Marathon, same deal. How many times do Americans have to pay with their lives because of the failings of the immigration system, and then have politicians go out there and say, well, we're going to enact a program that is likely to cause more problems that we won't be able to recover from? This is outrageous. Hearing after hearing, I've testified before 16 congressional hearings by now, folks, and many of those hearings focused on national security. And I'm not the only one. It's not just, well, Mike Cutler went up there, maybe he's a crackpot. I have testified with a guy by the name of Mike Maxwell, who was the Inspector General for Citizenship and Immigration Services, the branch that gives out, and I do mean gives out, citizenship and green cards. There's so little integrity to the process. He warned about it. There were a long line of witnesses who have echoed my concerns that by giving aliens lawful status and visas and not knowing who they are, that we undermine national security, that we set the stage for terrorist attacks, that we are allowing criminals into the United States. We hear these nonsense statistics, just like, you know, the president said, unemployment at a five-year low. My goodness gracious, 6.7%. Really? Really? Who aren't you counting, Mr. President? That's like the kid that comes home from school and says to his parents, be proud of me. I got an 80 on my test. The parents get all excited. They look at the test paper, and sure enough, question one, he got 80% of question one right and then got zeros on all the others, but we're going to ignore those. That's not convenient to consider. The unemployment rate is in the stratosphere when you consider how many Americans are no longer part of the labor. They've given up. They sense futility. And now we're being told that the solution is to dump how many millions of more authorized workers into a labor pool that can't find work, drive more Americans out, drive more wages down. Is this the way America was built? Is it fair? Is it reasonable? Think of how people get upset when a company looks to find someone to fill a position in a management job, and they go outside the company to get that new manager, and people say, wow, I worked for this company for 20 years. Why didn't they pick me? They had to go to some other place. Today, folks, the other place is likely to be India or some other country. These multinational corporations do not say a pledge of allegiance to the United States, but only to the bottom line. And they will be successful for a while. But just as Eric Gurr pointed out, and he's right, and this is happening around the world, if you keep on driving down the wages, you will ultimately destroy the middle class. And the middle class, by the way, is where the innovators come from. That's where it happens. You destroy the middle class, you destroy the customer base that most companies rely on. People in poverty can't go out there and buy all kinds of fancy garbage that's being peddled by these multinational corporations. We will lower the standard of living of people around the world, and especially in the United States. This is a betrayal of oaths of office, a betrayal of promises made to the voters by elected representatives, and the only people who are in the position to make these politicians accountable are we the people. And the time is now. The time is now for all of us, every American, irrespective of your political affiliation, to get your voice heard. This is not going to end well if we don't wake up and make the politicians understand that, yes, we are paying attention, and no, we're not as stupid as you think we are. We understand that our immigration laws exist to protect innocent lives and American jobs, and that's something that we need to get the politicians to hear. There is an election coming up, but I am greatly concerned that before the election, that these nitwits in the House of Representatives may well enact a program that will provide millions upon millions of illegal aliens whose true identities, backgrounds, and intentions for coming here are unknown and unknowable. And once they get lawful status, there will be no going back. It's driving a car off the cliff. You don't take a car that's been driven off the cliff to a car wash. This makes no sense. It makes no sense, and it makes fools of those millions of people who come into this country legally. It makes them feel pretty stupid, I'm going to guess, because they waited online, they did what they were supposed to do, and then they see people getting exactly what they have with no effort, with no nothing, just handed to them. And it's not about citizenship, folks. It's simply about identity documents and the authority to work in the United States legally. That is what they're looking for. And those identity documents can provide camouflage to the bad guys. The 9/11 terrorists in the aggregate used more than 300 false names to conceal themselves and to conceal their movements. They kept using alternate identities, so it was difficult to track where they were going and what they were doing. And for the United States government to do this, and by the way, I looked at that mission statement, or whatever you want to call it, the Magna Carta that these characters put out when they were retreating, and it talked about stringent background checks. Stringent what? You're talking about a population of at least, they're estimating 11 million. I'll tell you, it's probably 30 million or more. They're only going to have a minute or two, and all they're going to do is run fingerprints and a name. And if their fingerprints aren't on file in this country, and that was a point that was made quite clear by, I believe it was Trey Gowdy or Bob Goodlatte or one of the other members of Congress. I believe Trey Gowdy made that point at that hearing back in December when they were looking at political asylum being used as an embedding tactic for the cartel. And he said, well, if they weren't arrested in the United States and they didn't come in legally, the likelihood is no fingerprints on file. And that's right. Trey gets it. He's a former prosecutor. He understands. So you run fingerprints. They come back clean. The guy gives a fictitious name. That guy's going to sail right through the system at warp speed. And by the way, if you look at the Dreamers, the adjudications officers, the people that have to decide yay or nay, right now the approval rate is way up in the 90-odd percent era or area. And my understanding is, according to published reports, these folks that are doing that job are supposed to process a minimum of 12 applications a day. It probably takes under a half hour to approve an application. It could take hours, days, or weeks to deny one because you have to get an outside investigation, you've got to get more documentation, and then you've got to write a report that will withstand legal challenges. So if you're trying to meet a quota, and if your evaluation counts on that, if your evaluation determines your future and your career, and you're given a quota of 12 a day, I can tell you right now, you'd be extremely reluctant to deny anybody's application because all it's going to do is slow you down and cause you to miss that quota. And if they put enough pressure on that quota, your job can hang in the balance. When you hear people say, we're going to clear the backlog, or we're going to clear the red tape, what they're really saying is, we're going to get out our approval stamp and work it at warp speed. This in a program that has serious national security implications. As I told Jim Sensenbrenner when he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and he came out in favor of George W.'s guest worker program, I met him and I said to him, Mr. Chairman, if I can't sleep at night, then sure as hell, I don't want you to be able to sleep at night. Folks, I'm going to tell you the same thing. If I can't sleep at night, then you shouldn't sleep at night. You should get busy. You should contact your elected representatives, your congressmen, and your two senators, and you should make it crystal clear to them that this is unacceptable to you. Not because we're xenophobes, not because we're anti-immigrant, but because we don't want to see America suffer another terrorist attack, and we don't want to see more Americans wind up below the poverty line. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what is on the line. Nothing less than that. As always, I thank you for joining me. Please go to those two websites I've been talking about this evening, capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization, my good friends out there in Santa Barbara. where I'm sure the weather is warmer than we've been experiencing here in New York, and I always love working with them and my friends out there. And also, please go to my own website, michaelcutler.net. Please check out Eric Gurr's website as well. It was great having him on the program with me. I hope to be having further conversations with him as he goes out on the campaign trail. And through these campaign processes, folks, these candidates, hopefully, will raise the issues that we all need to be concerned with, especially immigration, so that politicians can run, but they can't hide from that very important issue. That should be what our mission is, especially today, especially in the wake of the Republican retreat. Well, that's it for this evening. Look forward to seeing you all next week, same place, same time, on the Michael Cutler Hour. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next time.